Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left, as always, is my Lancashirean co-host, Joe Nutsy, Nuttall. So Joe, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Obviously, we've had a lot of cricket news in the last few days or so. Firstly, obviously, Moeen Ali has retired from Test cricket, which... What a player. One of my favourite Test cricketers in recent years, personally, for me. Absolute legend of the last 7 or 8 years, how long he's been playing for. And it's not going to be the same without him, that's for sure. And I'll tell you what, England have been lucky to have such a good player, because he really has been, with the bat, with the ball and in the field, just brilliant for England. And he showed that even in his last test. Obviously, nobody played the Old Trafford test, so at the Oval he really showed, you know, how good he was with the bat. Some of those drives and stuff that he played were brilliant. So it's going to be a shame to see Moeen go, but obviously he's still here for white ball cricket. So yeah, he's focused since that.
Exactly, Joe. And to be fair to Moeen as well, he's had a fine test career, hasn't he? I just think 195 test wickets, the third most by an English spinner in test cricket history, behind only the great Derek Underwood and Graham Swan. He's had a fantastic career, and of course, wishing Mo nothing but the very best of luck. He's had some fantastic moments, some great, great memories over the years as well, John. I suppose before we get into today's County Championship wrap-up show, because that is the premise of today's podcast, what do you say has been your favourite Moeen Ali test memory from over the years? For me personally, I'm going to be honest, it'll be that hat-trick against South Africa. In particular, the ball to Dean Elgar. I thought that was an absolutely beautiful piece of bowling. Lovely drift, lovely bit of flight. Just a little bit of turn, and then, of course, drew the edge in and caught by Ben Stokes, I believe it was, in the slip, or Alistair Cook. But, Joe, what do you say was your favourite Moeen moments from over the years?
Yeah, I mean, a few stand out, obviously, his first 100. Remember the old Kookaburra gear we used to have? Really sticks in my mind. But I'd say the two for me is the temper he took at Lords against South Africa. I mean, that was brilliant. I actually saw highlights of that this morning on Instagram, and that was brilliant. And also, another thing that happened at Lords wasn't like a game that Moeen was incredible in, as in it wasn't his game to be remembered for. It was Stokes and Cook's game to be remembered for. The one against New Zealand, the catch that Moeen took to win that game, that was just before the incredible Ashes series as well. And the catch that Moeen Ali took to win that game for England down at third man was brilliant. So I'd say those like two moments, obviously the hat-trick as well, those two or three moments for me really stand out. But yeah, actually the catch is the one that really stands out to me, just because he kind of tied together a great test and pretty much kick-started a great summer.
Fair enough, Joe. And again, there's so many moments we can choose from, aren't there? And as you said, of course, he hasn't retired fully. We're still going to see him in county cricket. We're going to see him for England in white ball cricket. But it is a little bit of a shame. I'm going to be honest, Moeen has been very much an excellent figure in the England side. And of course, wishing Moeen nothing but the very best of luck heading into the foreseeable future in the white ball game. But, Joe, we aren't here just to talk about Moeen today, of course. We are here to record our final wrap-up show of the 2021 County Championship. I mean, it's been an incredible season for so, so many reasons, of course, for me as a Warwickshire fan, as I'll go into a little bit more in depth in today's podcast. It really has been an outstanding season. It really has. It's been absolutely extraordinary. And in today's show, this isn't going to be like our usual wrap-ups where it's like a proper in-depth dive into each of the games. This is going to be very much a review, kind of a look back on the incredible week of cricket that we've just experienced here in England and Wales. And then next week, we've got a proper bumper in-depth season review covering all 18 counties. So keep an eye out for that. But of course, before we get into the key moments, the key performances from this week's games, we do, of course, have our final county championship tables of the season. And here they are. Division 1, top of the standings, top of the mountain, Warwickshire County Cricket Club. County championship number 8, the first title since 2012. And we did it in incredible fashion. As I said, we'll get into that in a lot more detail as the podcast progresses. But the top of Division 1 were Warwickshire on 77 points. In second, an admirable effort from Lancashire. They were absolutely superb this season. Lancs finished in second on 73.5 points. In third were Nottinghamshire on 73 points. In fourth were Hampshire on 61.5 points. In fifth were Yorkshire on 44.5 points. And in sixth was Somerset on 31.5 points. And for those who don't know, Somerset were actually deducted of points for a slow overrate against Warwickshire. So they were originally on 32.5 points. After the final game of the divisional stage, though, that has gone down to 31.5. Going on to Division 2, the champions of Division 2 were Essex. And of course, for those who didn't realise how this this division was sorted out, it was based on average points per game. So Essex were crowned the champions. They averaged 19.2 points per game. In second were Gloucestershire, who averaged 15.2 points per game. In third were Durham, who averaged 11 points per game. In fourth were Northants, who averaged 10.8 points per game. In fifth were Surrey, who averaged 10 points a game. And in sixth and final place in Division 2 were Glamorgan, who averaged 6.9 points per game. And third and finally, we have Division 3. The champions of Division 3 were Kent County Cricket Club on 94 points. In second were Middlesex on 80 points. In third were Worcestershire on 67.5 points. In fourth were the Leicestershire Foxes on 54.5 points. In fifth were Derbyshire on 51.5 points. And bottom, the wooden spoon recipients of the 2021 County Championship was Sussex County Cricket Club on 30 points. So, Joe, I think there's only one place that we can start this week's review show, and that is, of course, my home ground, Edgbaston, for what was one of the best days of my life. I'm just going to put it out there. I'm going to go into it in so much more detail as the show progresses. But before I get into my piece, and of course, the Warwickshire bias, please feel free to skip that, listeners, if you don't want to listen to that this week. But Joe, I just want to get your thoughts on the game. What did you make of that incredible showdown between Warwickshire and Somerset at Fortress Edgbaston?
Well, I'm not going to lie, I didn't actually think Warwickshire would win that game. I saw the scores. I mean, obviously, this was like the most, other than the Lancs game, this was really the only relevant game in terms of like Lancs this week, because, and of course for Hampshire fans as well, because that was pretty much who could stop, certainly stop Lancs from winning the title, and obviously that's what happened in the end. But I think I didn't really see Warwickshire winning that game at all. But I think for me, the kind of momentum swung on day three when it was Yates who got that ton. Was Yates, no? Yeah, when Yates was absolutely just whacking the ball to all parts of the ground. And obviously, as I say, he got a ton, got a very, very quick, innovative ton as well. And for me, that's kind of when the pendulum swung, and that's kind of where the momentum kind of suited Warwickshire and swung into Warwickshire's favour. And I'll be honest, I did kind of have belief when Jack Leach was at the crease. I did kind of think we'd see another Headingley 2019-esque performance from Leach. Another one that out of as many balls as possible would have been ideal there. But fair play to Warwickshire. I don't think Warwickshire or Lancs are necessarily the strongest team in the country. Certainly, if I'm being honest, I don't think Warwickshire are the strongest team in the country on paper. But fair play to them. You know, they got to Division 1 and everyone who got there pretty much had a chance of winning from the first game. And, you know, Warwickshire obviously ended up doing that. And just imagine if there had been a result in the game at Old Trafford between Lancs and Warwickshire, because then the finals there would have been pretty anticlimactic, because if Lancs had won, we probably would have won the title. And if Warwickshire had won, they would have already won the title anyway. So it would have been a bit more anticlimactic, but Warwickshire are now the best team in the country, technically. So 100% they deserve that win.
It has a nice ring to that, I can't lie, Joe. Best team in the country, Warwickshire County Cricket Club, champions of England and Wales in 2021. Before I get into my piece about Warwickshire, I would just like to offer my commiserations to, of course, yourself, Joe, and all of the Lancashire fans out there. A fantastic performance from the Red Rose in this year's championship. And of course, the likes of Hampshire and Notts as well really fought tooth and nail in this year's competition. Any of those four clubs would have been worthy winners of this year's championship for different reasons. And all four of those clubs could be tremendously proud of their achievements in this season's county championship. But just one final thing as well, Somerset, because Somerset had a really, really poor Division 1. Okay, the divisional stage just went horribly wrong for Somerset. Not a single victory, of course. And a lot of people heading into this game expected them to simply roll over and just gift Warwickshire a very easy victory. And instead, what we saw was a character, a fight, a desire from this set of Somerset boys. And I just want to give them a tremendous amount of credit as well, because they came out here. They did not make it easy for Warwickshire at all. Yes, the bowling could have been a lot better. I completely understand that. But the likes of Leach, Azhar Ali, Tom Abel, Lewis Gregory, Steve Davis, there was so much resistance from that Somerset core in this game that, to be honest, heading into day four, Joe, I didn't expect Warwickshire to win. I'm going to be completely honest. I did not expect that at all. I sat down in my seat in the Raglan stand at around 20 past 11 on day four, and I saw the pitch. I saw how Yates and Lamb and Rhodes been batting, and I just thought, we're going to get them about six or seven down here and Lancashire are going to get the title. And instead, what we witnessed at Edgbaston Stadium was one of the greatest bowling displays that I've ever seen from Warwickshire County Cricket Club, without a shadow of a doubt. It was absolutely sensational. Before I get into the actual game itself as well, just a massive shout out to the crowd. That crowd at Edgbaston, they're only about 2,000 to 2,500 people in. But I'll tell you what, it sounded like there were 10 or 20,000 in. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. From ball one straight until the final wicket by Liam Norwell, the crowd were behind the boys 100%. 100%. It was one of the greatest atmospheres for completely different reasons, of course. And I've been to some very, very special nights and special occasions at Edgbaston, but you could just tell there was this air of anticipation, this air of desire, this air of belief in that Warwickshire crowd. And we bared witness to one of the greatest days in the club's history. And for those who don't understand why this means so much to us, again, this isn't the Warwickshire County Cricket Club podcast, but I just want to give you a real fan's perspective of what this means. For Warwickshire in the past, what, five seasons in Red Bull cricket, we struggled. In 2017, we got relegated. In 2018, we got promoted from Division 2. We won Division 2, but at the same time, it was really bittersweet because we said goodbye to some club legends, the likes of Jonathan Trott, the likes of Keith Barker, Chris Wright. So even that victory was almost, you know, made a little bit less special because we lost our club legends. Trotty retired, Wrighty moved to Leicestershire, Barks moved to Hampshire. And even then, that season wasn't really one to celebrate because we had been relegated beforehand. We should be in Division 1 as a club. And then 2019 rolls around and we have so many injuries. Of course, Toby Lesterjoe from Your Boys Lancashire came and joined us on loan for a bit, as did Ben Mike from Leicestershire. We brought James Wainman up from the second 11 and we almost got relegated. Without Dom Sibley scoring 1,200 runs, Warwickshire would have been relegated again. And then we go into 2020, nobody's allowed in. We have another terrible season. We don't win a game. And although the standings, we were second or third in the central group, don't necessarily reflect a poor season, it was a poor season for a club by our standards. So we fast forward to 2021. And Joe, to be honest, I hate agreeing with you, but on paper, I wouldn't say Warwickshire were the favourites at all. We're very much a team which has come out of a transition. We've got a lot of young players. We've got a lot of players who have just joined the club as well, the likes of Danny Briggs, for example. So I didn't expect this at all from Warwickshire. But what we've witnessed over the course of this season, all the way back starting from the Notts game at Trent Bridge and Bresnan with that incredible individual effort, we had Rob Yates with that 120 against Essex Edgbaston, making Simon Harmer go wicketless for the second time in his Essex career. All of these little stepping stones, all of these minor victories have just congregated together and amalgamated in one of the most tremendous seasons in Warwickshire's history. And to be honest, every single one of those boys, Yates, Sibley, Hayne, Rhodes, Burgess, Lamb, Bresnan, Wokes, Briggs, Miles and Norwell deserve an immense amount of credit, as does the coach, Mark Robinson, because this season, it's the first season back with fans back at Edgbaston and, of course, all around the country. And we are county champions for the eighth time in our 137-year history. It doesn't feel real. It still hasn't sunk in for me. And imagine for Warwickshire fans as well. We're still trying to come to terms with what exactly has happened because it was an incredible game, an incredible occasion, an incredible performance as well. And Chris Woke was exceptional. I mean, that ball to Craig Overton in that second innings was one of the best deliveries I've seen at Edgbaston. It's as simple as that. It was tailing in. And then at the last second, as soon as Overton puts his bat down, it tails back out and Castles is off stump. I mean, it's ridiculous bowling. On a flat wicket, you've got 10 wickets to take and Warwickshire did it. And at the end as well, before we go on to our other games, of course, this week, Joe, and again, this isn't the Warwickshire podcast, but something which was incredibly special and memorable at the end as well was the fact that the players did the lap of honour, clapping the fans. And at the end, you had all the celebrations in front of the South Stand. And after those had finished, Sam Hain comes over with the trophy and basically just hands it in amongst the crowd so everyone can have a photo with it, have a look at it. And I just thought that was incredibly classy from one of our absolute favourite players here in the West Midlands. So all in all, an incredibly special performance from Warwickshire. A memorable day. I'll never, ever forget Friday, the 24th of September, 2021. And 3 days later, it still hasn't sunk in. I'll be talking about it again in the review show, but honestly, that has meant the world to me as a Warwickshire fan. It really has. I've had an incredible weekend. I'm going to have an incredible rest of the year now as a result of that. And we never forget days like that. And for me, who didn't get to experience 2012, I wasn't able to go to New Road. I wasn't able to go to finals day 2014 or Lords in 2016. To watch that final moment, Liam Norwell dismissing Jack Brooks, and who else but the captain, Will Rhodes, who's been incredible all season long, taking a good catch, and just the ecstasy, the celebrations, the carnage, the chaos at Edgbaston was incredible. It was one of the best days of my life, without a shadow of a doubt. So that's my piece on Warwickshire for this week. I promise not to talk too much more about the Bear and Ragged staff in today's episode, but what a week it's been for the Bear and Ragged staff, and long may it continue, shall we say, heading into the next few years. But of course, Joe, Warwickshire aside, we did, of course, have another fantastic game up in Egbeth. And I know that everyone pretty much had their eyes set on this on day three, Lancashire versus Hampshire, the Red Rose emerging victorious by one wicket in the end. Joe, I'll pass over to you as our resident Lancs fan. What did you make of that incredible game up in Liverpool?
Yeah, so I think for me, that is the best Lancs game I've seen. Like, I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't there. I couldn't make it. But I watched most of it on the live stream when I could. For me, that's the best, like, certainly the best four-day game that has happened in my lifetime. I would argue, out of any county, that's the best four-day game. One of them, anyway. I mean, you would argue differently, of course.
Do you know what I would go with? I'd go Middlesex Yorkshire 2016, purely because of Toby Rowland Jones' hat-trick.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Mm. But I just feel like for me, this game is just... It had everything, really. It really did. And it wasn't a very high scoring game. It was only 150, and that was from James Vince. But it kind of, you know, it swung both ways. And not the ball, the game. The momentum of the game. Well, the ball also did, but I mean, yeah, the momentum of the game. And, you know, you really, really couldn't tell who was going to win. And I was so sure Lancs were going to chase that. And then it kind of, especially the start that Davies had and that Balderson had. And then, you know, it kind of got to a point where I was getting a little bit nervous. Maybe they won't. Maybe it's going to be tough. And then, again, you know, they kind of steadied the ship and it ended up with Parkey on striker. And that single that Blatherwick took, which meant that he was on strike and not Villas, was an odd one, in my opinion. I'm not really sure why that happened. I'm sure you would probably agree. I don't really know why that single was taken. And then he obviously nicked off, and then Parkey had two balls to survive. And that's probably the greatest innings he'll ever play, in my opinion. And I know we didn't win the title. And I know in the grand scheme of things, it was all for nothing. But it showed how good the team is. How good the squad is, and we beat a good Hampshire team as well. We beat a really good Hampshire team on a club wicket, which typically club wickets aren't really the best. We've had good success at Egbeth, but generally club wickets, of course, aren't the best compared to Lancs, who play at Old Trafford, and Hampshire, who play at the Aegeus Bowl. They're two test venues. So I think for me that was just an incredible game, an incredible atmosphere, and when Dane hit those winning runs, I just think the celebrations were fitting for me. So, yeah, as I said, I think that's certainly Lancs' best four-day game that they've ever played in my lifetime. Maybe the best out of any county in my lifetime. So, maybe ever. Who knows? Maybe ever. But, I mean, as I said earlier, fair play to Warwickshire. It kind of got to a point where I knew that they were going to win eventually. But there was times when I was hoping, if only it could have rained on day four at Edgbaston, but never mind, it wasn't to be. So, yeah, I mean, an incredible two games of cricket. And as I say, the Lancs game was absolutely phenomenal.
It was, Joe. And you know what? This goes for any fans of any county out there. Your day will come, okay? Just because it's Warwickshire's day this year, and it was an incredible day, a spectacular day.
By the way, our day will be Saturday because we'll win the Bob Willis Trophy.
At the Bob Willis Trophy, yeah. We'll talk about that later, Joe, of course, towards the end of today's show. But this is the thing, like anything can happen, and this is the magic of the County Championship. Let's be honest, we came down to the last day of the last round of fixtures, 14 rounds of games, and it came down to the last day, the last session even, at Edgbaston. That's why I say it's a testament to the competitive nature of the County Championship. And that is why, for me, it is the best domestic cricketing competition in the world, without a shadow of a doubt. You don't get this in any other first-class tournament. And I cover a lot of them. I cover the Sheffield Shield, the Plunkett Shield in New Zealand, the four-day stuff in South Africa and the West Indies. But the County Championship means more. And obviously, Joe, up in Egbert as well, you could see the celebrations from Lancs at the end. It was an incredibly tense game, an incredibly hard-fought victory for the Red Rose. And I tell you what a game of cricket it was. I watched a bit of the live stream towards the end of the day's play at Edgbaston. And when Dane Vilas hit those winning runs, I thought, my goodness, Lancs have won the title here. That's the kind of defining moment which, you know, shapes a county championship winning campaign. And it was an amazing game of cricket. And Lancashire aside, Joe, of course, because they deserve great plaudits and a lot of credit for the way in which they've performed this season. Another guy I'd like to mention as well, Tom Bailey, Joe. Incredibly impressive, 7 for 37, finished the season with 50 wickets in just 12 games. But Lancashire aside, Hampshire put up an incredibly, incredibly admirable fight, in particular Mason Crane. I'm going to be honest, towards the end, I thought he was going to win it for them. When he took that fifer, he was bowling beautifully. He almost caught the edge of Matt Parkinson's blade as well in his final over. And he was just exceptional. He's had a fantastic season. He played the night watchman role brilliantly against Yorkshire, for example. And Mason Crane, honestly, deserves a lot of credit for this season. I think he's been absolutely exceptional. And I know for Hampshire fans, this is going to be a bit of pill to swallow. Of course it is. It was the club's best chance at the championship since 1973, you could argue. They were really in the fight. They were in the hunt up until the very, very last hurdle. But the fact is, the signs look so promising for Hampshire as a club. If they retain Mohammed Abbas, Carl Abbott, Keith Barker, Brad Wheel, and then you've got the likes of a Liam Dawson or a Mason Crane in the team, they're one of the finest bowling attacks in the entire country, without a shadow of a doubt. The only thing that Hampshire need to do heading into next season and beyond is to get runs. That is what has let Hampshire down this season. They've had some massive performances from the likes of James Vince, from the likes of Nick Gubbins, of course, who's joined the club recently from Middlesex, Allsop, Weatherly and Holland. They produce big performances at times, but there just needs to be a bit more cohesion in certain games. Instead of one player scoring a century, you need someone else to score a quick 560 or a gritty 80, for example, to really produce some big scores. But to be honest, for both teams, they put up a fantastic fight. They deserve a lot of plaudits. And to be honest, heading into 2022 and beyond, Joe, I think both Lancashire and Hampshire will be up there again. I think they're very, very strong contenders indeed for the title. But Joe, moving aside from that incredible encounter up at Egbert Cricket Club in Liverpool, we do, of course, have our third and final Division One game of the season, which was between Nottinghamshire and Yorkshire at Trent Bridge. Now, Nottinghamshire beat Yorkshire by 5 wickets in this encounter. And Joe, there was one player in particular that I just wanted you to talk about because I know you're a big fan of his game. And that is, of course, Joe Clark. What did you make of his 109 in this particular game?
Yeah, I think Joe Clark is a very elegant player. I really do. I think he's got a really, really good temperament. And for me, that showed in this game. That was a perfect, perfect first-class innings, 109 off 204. Like, that is a striking just above 50. That's a perfect innings. 15 fours in there as well. So, you know, he soaked up dots when he needed to. You know, he rotated the strike when he needed to. Also hit a six as well. So, for me, that was a perfect first-class innings from Joe Clark. And that's showing why he's so good, really. That it really is. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few months in the winter. Obviously, he's ending the season well. Yeah, who knows what's going to happen over the next few months. It'd be nice to see him get another chance in the BBL. Obviously, he was with the Scorchers last year and didn't really get much time to play because Livingston and Roy were there to almost, you know, resume their place as the main overseas. So it'd be good to see him get another IPL deal, another BBL deal. And yeah, I mean, he's such a good player. He'll be an asset to whatever team he is with.
100%, Joe. He's one of the most destructive batsmen in county cricket right now, without a shadow of a doubt, and again, has had a very, very good season across formats. I must admit, I was surprised that that was his first century of the season in the championship, though. I'm going to be honest, he's had some big scores before that, scored 760 runs at 36.19 in this year's championship, but that was his first century of the season. So fair play to Joe Clark, scored 103 boundaries as well, which isn't bad at all. In terms of one other thing, I'd just like to point out from Notts, not just in this game, but in the season as a whole, Joe, we have to talk about Nottinghamshire's bowlers. In particular, of course, Luke Fletcher, the leading wicket taker in the 2021 County Championship, 66 wickets at 14.9, with a 2.33 economy rate, 4 5 wicket hauls, and even a 10 wicket haul. I mean, 2021 really has been the year of Luke Fletcher. He's been absolutely unstoppable. But it hasn't just been Luke Fletcher. I look at Dane Patterson as well. What a fantastic piece of recruitment this was. Of course, Dane was meant to be a Colpack in 2020, had a few visa issues, so they brought him back in 2021 as an overseas player. And he took 54 wickets, Joe, at 17.98. What a shrewd piece of business that was. I've no doubt that Dane will be back next season at Trent Bridge and, you know, tearing up the scene yet again. But it wasn't just those two. You got guys like Stuart Broad, of course. He took 23 wickets. Joey Everson, who impressed in this game as well, took 4 wickets and 14 in the season as a whole. The likes of Brett Hutton, Liam Patterson-White, Lyndon James. I mean, the future looks bright for Notts. In a year which, let's be honest, started pretty poorly. They didn't win a game up until the East Midlands Derby at the Ancora Ground, but the future really does look bright for the East Midlands County, considering all of the frustration in Red Bull cricket. I spoke earlier about Warwickshire's, you know, lack of success in the Red Bull arena, but Notts didn't win a game for 2.5 years. And yet they've came into 2021. As soon as they won that game against Derbyshire, everything clicked. And when you look at this team on paper, they are definite contenders for 2022, aren't they, Joe? With the likes of Hamidou, obviously maybe with England, but even Hamid aside, you've got the likes of Slater, Duckett, Mullaney, Clark, Tom Moores, and then that incredible bowling lineup. I think the future looks bright at Trent Bridge, personally. What do you say, Joe?
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think, you know, I'd just say they have that incredible bowling lineup, which, I mean, Luke Fletcher, what a season he's had. He's been phenomenal this year, Luke Fletcher. He does deserve to win the Player of the Year award. I don't know if he will or not. He would deserve to win it if he did. I don't think he will, because I don't see Joe Root not winning that, if I'm being honest. And again, Joe Root would thoroughly deserve it as well, as we all know. But, I mean, Luke Fletcher, I know he didn't take a wicket in the second innings, but in the first innings as well, another threefer for him. Just since take wickets every time he bowls. And let's not forget, Stuart Broad will be available from time to time next season, I'd imagine. Once he's recovered from his injury, which will hopefully be in time for the Ashes. Not, as you say, Notts are looking quite scary for next year.
100%, Joe. Yeah, they are. And of course, aside from Notts, we have to talk about their rivals in this particular game, of course, Yorkshire. And to be honest, it's been an okay season for the White Rose. I'm going to be honest, reaching Division 1 and deservingly so. But again, it just didn't go right in the divisional stage, did it? Of course, I think that heavy defeat to Warwickshire kind of just, you know, killed any momentum. But with that being said, in this game, there was a moment which really did put a nice smile on my face. And that was Adam Lyth getting 153. He was absolutely superb. Now, for those who have been watching Adam Lyth this season, he has struggled at times to score big runs. And I know that a lot of fans have made that very clear on the live streams. But Adam Lyth in this game, in the second innings in particular, was absolutely phenomenal. He was a real rock. He was a real concrete girder at the top of the innings for Yorkshire, rotated the strike well, trusted his defence, allowed players to bat alongside him and, you know, get into the rhythm of things. And he scored a fantastic 150. And in a season where Adam Lyth has struggled at times to find consistent runs, I think that's just a really, really nice way to end the season for one of Yorkshire's greatest batsmen, to be honest. 819 runs, average of 39, of course. That was his third century of the season. So for Adam Lyth, take a bow. I think that was an absolutely sensational knock in the final game against Notts. But just in terms of Yorkshire, just one final comment on the White Rose in terms of 2022 and beyond. Again, they have to address the batting, because this season across the divisional and the group stage is They only got 4 batting points in each of those stages, so a combined total of 8 batting points in the entire season. Now, if you compare that to a team like Warwickshire, for example, who again have struggled at times to get consistent batting points, Warwickshire got 8 batting points alone in the divisional stage. Lancs got 10, Notts got 10. So heading into 2022 and beyond, with a batting lineup, with the likes of Adam Lyth, with the likes of Tom Cole-Cadmore, Harry Brook, Gary Balance, I do expect a lot more from Yorkshire. I'm going to be honest, they haven't had a bad season at all. It's one that they can look back on and go, you know what, we've made some good positive steps forward, but I just feel like the batting at times could have been a lot better from the White Rose in terms of applying themselves, having time at the crease, instead of just flashing the blade and going for big shots. So fingers crossed, Yorkshire fans, of course, 2022 will bring even greater success for your boys. But yeah, 2021, a decent season, I'm going to be honest, in the Red Bull Arena, but I just feel as though the batting could have been better at times. So Joe, moving on from Division 1 then, let's go to Division 2. And I suppose there's only one place that we can start with Division 2 this week, and that is, of course, with the Division 2 champions, Essex County Cricket Club, because Essex absolutely hammered Northamptonshire by an innings and 44 runs in Chelmsford. This game finished in 2 days. It was absolutely staggering. It's the shortest county championship match ever. It lasted for 96.2 overs, which is staggering, to say the least. And Joe, I'm not sure if you actually saw the live stream. I was watching bits of this live stream, watching the likes of Sam Cook come charging in and taking a 5 for Shane Snater as well. Fantastic, as was Jamie Porter. But there's one big question, Joe. What did you make of the pitch? I'd love to know your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think the fact that Essex went and got 170 shows that it was not that bad and you can bat on it. I think if Essex had been bowled out for 70, then maybe you could start asking a few questions. But, you know, I mean, Dan Lawrence got 33, a very quick 33. You know, Paul Walter got 26. Adam Wheatley got 34. So, you know, these guys are getting starts on this pitch. And for me, that just shows it was not that bad, really. I just think Middlesex, if I'm being honest, applied themselves pretty poorly. And to get a ball out for 45, last game of the season, is not what you want to. It's not how you want to end the season. And Luke Proctor, really, the only person who kind of, you know, stood up for the count in that second innings, 24. Everyone else, well, the next highest score was 8 by Taylor. So I think that kind of says it all. There was 4 ducks in the second innings, and White was not out on 0 off 1, and there was 2 in the first innings. And again, White was not out, not off 1. So, you know, the fact that they had so many ducks, so little batsmen applying themselves, other than, as I say, Luke Proctor, Emilio Gay and Adam Rossington. Apart from these guys, and I say Adam Rossington, he only got 14. It's not, I wouldn't even really class 14 as a start, if I'm being honest. So, you know, the fact that you only got these guys kind of properly applying themselves and properly grinding it out kind of says how tough this week was for Northants. But look, we know Northants were a good side. This happens every now and then, but disappointing way to end the season.
Incredibly disappointing, Joe, to say the least. And it wasn't just the end of the season, of course. It was the end of David Ripley's time as Northants head coach as well. I mean, it was a horrid, horrid end to what has been an incredible, incredible coaching career with the side at Wantage Road. And of course, just on my behalf as well, I just want to say a massive thank you to David Ripley, because he's been absolutely sensational as Northamptonshire head coach. Of course, you think back to the T20 Blast successes, and he's been one of the most successful coaches in the side's history. So, of course, wishing David Ripley the very best of luck. He's taken another coaching role in the club, and John Sadler is becoming the new head coach at Wantage Road. But it's just such a sad way to end what's been a fantastic time as head coach. And I hope that that doesn't, you know, reflect on him as a coach, because he's been fantastic. He really has. It was an off game. It was one of those. It's the end of the season as well. Northants, I suppose you could say, weren't really, you know, playing for the title or anything like that. So maybe that, you know, that crept into their mind. But yeah, just a really lackluster performance from Northants. Hopefully they do improve heading into 2022 and beyond. But Joe, in terms of Essex, we have to mention them, of course. They didn't reach Division 1 this season, but they've completely dominated Division 2. Unbeaten, they won every single one of their games that they appeared in. I mean, Sam Cook. We have to say a little bit about Sam Cook, don't we, Joe? Little chef, he's 24 years of age. And I put this stat up on Twitter the other day. He's gone from being the 4th to the 3rd to Essex's leading first-class wicket taker from the years 2019 to 2021, he has been absolutely unstoppable. In this year's county championship, 58 wickets in 13 games with an average of 14.43, which has included 3 5 wicket hauls and a 10 wicket haul in this game. Sam Cook, for me, Joe, is someone who is definitely knocking the England door down. Now, don't get me wrong, we've got a lot of good young seamers in county cricket. We've got a lot of good established ones as well, the likes of Ollie Robinson and Craig Overton, who are, of course, going on to represent England now. But Sam Cook, bare minimum, I'm talking absolute bare minimum of the line, has got to represent the England Lions. He has to, because he is a very, very gifted seamer. This is showing natural progression, natural development. And I tell you what, in what has been I'd say a disappointing season for Essex, purely because we had a lot higher expectations. And to be honest, in another year, they could have been fighting in Division One without that COVID outbreak in the Derbyshire game. But he has been an absolute superstar. And I tell you what, the future for him is so, so bright. He's got an incredibly high ceiling. He's got a delicious in-swinger. That's the only way that I can describe it. He always seems to get results when Essex need him to deliver. And of course, aside from Sam Cook as well, Shane Snaiter. What a season he's had. In the Royal Under One Day Cup, he was absolutely scintillating. And then in this game, taking figures of 4 for 7, Essex have had a very, very good end to the season. And although, yes, they would have been wanting to compete and defending their crown in 2021, again, I think they'll be competing again next season. We'll have to wait and see, of course. Ryan Tendershkar has retired, and as has Varun Chopra today, which is a little bit sad for me as a Warwickshire fan, because he was one of my favourite ever Bears captains in T20 cricket. But yeah, I do think Essex will be back firing at their best in 2022, to say the least. And of course, just one final word on Northants as well, Joe. Hopefully Northants can compete again in 2022. Because as you said, they've got some good young talent in there, the likes of Ricardo Vasconcelos, the likes of Harry Goldston as well, Freddie Heldrake. Like, they've got a lot of good young talent. Tom Taylor's been excellent as well. And again, he took a 4th in this game. But yeah, it's just a bit of a bad day at the office, shall we say, for the East Midlands County. But fingers crossed, Northants fans, they will be back to their best in 2022. Moving on to our next Division 2 game then, Joe. I suppose there's only one place that we can go to, and that is, of course, the M25, also known as the Keir Oval, for what was one of the flattest pitches that I've ever seen in the county championship. Now, for those who don't know what happened in this game, this was Ricky Clark's final ever county game, final ever game in the county circuit. And before we talk about this game, I just want to give a tremendous shout out to Ricky, an absolute icon of the county circuit, played for Surrey, Warwickshire and Derbyshire, even played some games for England, had a couple of test matches as well. And just over the course of his career, just listen to these stats. 11,387 first-class runs, 4,252 List A runs, 2,305 T20 runs. And then with the ball as well, 534 first-class wickets at 30.51, 158 List A wickets at 38.5, and 113 T20 wickets at 24.99. And in addition to batting and bowling, he has got some of the safest hands I've ever seen in cricket. I used to call him Hoover hands because he almost used to generate gravity in the way in which the ball would just caress so effortlessly into his hands. It was incredible to see Ricky Clark in the slips. But Joe, before we mention about the game, any words on Ricky Clark? What have you got to say to the man, the myth, the legend himself as he bows out from an illustrious county cricket career?
Yeah, well, Ricky Clark is undoubtedly a cricket legend. That's without a doubt, obviously. Played for England. I wouldn't call him an England legend as such because he didn't, unfortunately, play enough games for England. But without a doubt, a county legend, a Warwickshire legend and a Surrey legend, without a doubt. So it's such a shame that he is retired. But of course, if he feels that it's the right time, then it's something we have to respect and wish him nothing but the best in retirement, of course, and whatever the future holds for him.
Absolutely, Joe. Very, very well put. And of course, wishing Ricky nothing but the very best of luck heading into the future away from the game. And Joe, in terms of the game itself, in terms of this particular game, I'm going to be honest, maybe not the most memorable in terms of a result, but what did you make of the batting performances of the likes of Ollie Pope and Chris Cook? What did you make of the game itself at the Oval? Because it was an incredibly flat wicket, wasn't it, in South London?
Certainly was, yeah. I don't think I've ever really seen a game like it before. Almost 1,500 runs scored in just 2 innings of a game. I mean, it is incredible. obviously Glamorgan declared before they got to 700. I can only imagine because they thought they were Skittle, sorry, but they really wish they got to 700 now. It would have been a cool achievement. But yeah, I mean, firstly on Glamorgan, Chris Cook, I do believe that's his maiden double ton. And 205 off 299 balls with only 18 fours. Just appreciate that. Joe Clark in his 109 hit 15. So for almost 100 more runs, there was only three extra fours hit. So, I mean, Chris Cook did an awful lot of running in that game. And then they obviously declared and had a long, long time in the field. And Ollie Pope, this is why Ollie Pope should be the... England should build the team around him as a batter. I mean, obviously around Joe Root as well. But with the future, the long, long term in mind, Ollie Pope should be the guy who England looks to build the team around. He's just incredible. And is that, is it, I think I'm correct in saying his first class average at the Oval is like in the hundreds.
It's 99.94. It's the same as Don Bradman's test average, which I think is quite fitting.
Well, there you go. And obviously Don Bradman's last test was at the Oval as well. Yeah. So,
do you know who got him out, Joe? Just in an interesting piece of cricket trivia. Who actually took Don Bradman's last wicket? This is one for the real County hardcore fans out there.
I mean, 100% I should know this. Actually, funnily enough, they told us the answer of this when I went. I was lucky enough to go on a tour of the Oval a couple of years ago. They told us the answer. I think I'm correct in saying it's Eric Hollies.
It is indeed, Joe, yeah. Warwickshire's all-time leading first-class wicket taker. And of course, the man who has one of the most iconic stands in cricket history named after him.
Yeah, I mean, he's not quite as good as the party stand, let's be honest, but it's, I will take your point, a very, very good stand, and I'm pretty impressed by my knowledge there. Like, the fact that I just pulled that from the depths of my brain is pretty good. I'm pretty impressed by myself there, but yeah, I mean, back to Ollie Pope anyway.
And humble too.
Yeah, very humble, of course. Yeah, very humble. Back to Ollie Pope anyway. As I say, England 100% should build the team around him and Joe Root. You know, batting wise, I mean, they're just, firstly, I think Ollie Pope kind of reminds me of Joe Root a little bit. Some of the shots that he plays off the back foot is like a young Joe Root from like, I don't know, like 2014 kind of time. He really, really does remind me of Joe Root. So I do think Ollie Pope is the guy who English should basically just centre everything around alongside Root. And it's great to see him back at number four and getting almost 300 runs at number four. I mean, lastly on this game, I find it hilarious. Every single Glamorgan player had a ball. I find that absolutely brilliant. There was definitely some... I mean, Hamish Rutherford got his first ever first-class wicket in, what is that, 100th game or something like that. So, I mean, that was good. Obviously, Chris Cook as well had a ball, which is brilliant. So, I mean, yeah, I don't really have anything else to say on this game other than it was an outrageous game of cricket. There were so many runs. I don't really know what else to say. It was just incredible, really.
It was, Joe. I think that's what we'll leave it at, to be honest, from the Oval for this week. But yeah, a very, very, very memorable game, shall we say, in South London for our final Division 2 game, of course, for Surrey and Glamorgan in this year's County Championship. But Joe, talking of Division 2 then, let's go on to the third and final game of the season before we wrap up with Division 3, which saw Gloucestershire beat Durham by 7 wickets in Bristol. Now, in terms of the game itself, it was a very, very low-scoring one. Definitely a game for the bowlers, shall we say, as 33 wickets fell in what was basically 2.5 days. But in terms of just some milestones from this game, I want to talk about Zafar Gohar, if I may, Joe. The overseas signing from Pakistan for Gloucestershire in the divisional stage. I would love to see him come back to Bristol in 2022. Just looking at his stats, in 4 games, he took 20 wickets at 14.35. Add into the mix as well a shrewd economy rate of 2.44, which was the joint second best out of any Gloucestershire bowler in this year's competition, alongside Graham Van Buren. So for me, Zafar Gohar, who took 11 for 101 in this particular game, deserves an immense amount of credit. He's come to Gloucestershire, he's settled in immediately, and he's produced the goods for the West Country outfit, basically from ball one. So in 2022, I would absolutely love to see him back down at the Bristol County ground. And then just another one, Joe, of course, from Durham this time. I put this up on Twitter, and this blows my mind, absolutely blows my mind. If I had to ask you out there, listeners, who has been Durham's leading wicket taker in every single first-class season from 2017 to 2021, who would you say it's been? Joe, I'll ask you the exact same question. Who would you say has been the leading wicket taker per season for Durham from 2017 to 2021?
I mean, there can surely only be one answer to this, right? And that's, I'd imagine, Chris Rushworth.
You are indeed correct, Joe. Let me just give you the stats. So 2017, 47 wickets, top of the tree. 2018, 60 wickets, again, top of the pile. 2019, 69 wickets. 2020, 16 wickets in four games in the Bob Willis Trophy. And this year in 2021, 59 wickets for Chris Rushworth, second leading wicket taker in the entire competition. The man's unbelievable. He really is. He is Mr. Durham at the moment. And if we actually extend it back to 2014, in 2014 and 2015, he was also the leading wicket taker. Since 2014, only in 2016, where Graham Onions took 54 wickets in that season, has someone other than Chris Rushworth been Durham's leading first-class wicket taker. It's absolutely staggering. It really is. But in terms of the game itself, Joe, I'm going to be honest, again, a very low-scoring one, not exactly the greatest of games for either batting unit. But in terms of just one final, you know, milestone from this game, I would like to say a little bit of a congratulations. And that is, of course, to Liam Travascus, a former guest here on the County Cricket Podcast. He took 5 for 78 from 33 overs in Gloucestershire's first innings. And that is Liam's first ever first-class five-wicket haul. So I think that is fantastic. In what was obviously a very disappointing game for Durham, we've seen some great individual milestones. And to be honest, in the season as a whole, I think it's been quite good for Durham. Of course, reaching the 50-over final, they've made a lot of good progress, some very good strides forward in Red Bull cricket this season. They almost reached Division 1, didn't they, after finishing third in Group 1 behind Notts and Warwickshire. But I just feel like for Durham now, after what has been a very, very tough few seasons, of course, after that ECB bailout, things look really, really bright and promising up at the Riverside, with the likes of David Beddingham, Alex Lees, Scott Borthwick, of course, who's come back recently, Chris Rushworth, Ben Rain as well, who continues to take wickets for fun for the North Eastern County. So to be honest, Joe, for both Gloucestershire and Durham, I think 2022 looks very, very promising indeed. With Gloss as well, with the likes of Chris Dent, if Brathwaite comes back, if they make Zafar Gohar and, you know, an integral overseas signing, and then you've got the likes of Van Buren, Ryan Higgins, Tom Lace, Miles Hammond, Ian Cobain, Bracey. Yeah, I think 2022 will be a lot brighter for both teams, to be honest. I want to see both teams progress from this initial foundation. So, of course, Gloucestershire and Durham fans, it hasn't quite been your side year. Although for Gloucestershire, of course, they did win 8 county championship games, which was the most out of any side in England and Wales, and they deserve an immense amount of credit for that. So well done, of course, to the glorious Gloucesters for that achievement. But I feel like in 2022, this was the foundation, the springboard. 2022 will be where both of these sides really come to the forefront. That's what I'd like to see from both of these sides. So, Joe, moving from Division 2 then, let's go on to the third and final division. And of course, our final segment, our final wrap-up segment of the 2021 County Championship, we do, of course, have Division 3. So first and foremost, I'd like to start a new road, Joe, because again, talking of retirements and titans of the county game, we said goodbye to Daryl Mitchell, of course, a former guest here on the County Cricket Podcast and a legend, a bona fide legend of Worcestershire County Cricket Club. Joe, I said it about Ricky. What words would you have to say to Daryl as he bows out of the county circuit?
Yeah, obviously, Daryl is a former podcast guest. For me personally, one of the better podcasts we've done, in my opinion. And again, pretty much the same, really. I wish him nothing but the best for the future. It's a shame he's retiring. But if this is when he feels is the right time to retire, then, you know, obviously that's his choice. And as I say, I wish him nothing but the best. And it's nice that he ended on a not out. Mm-hmm. I think, like, he's always going to be not out now. I think that's quite good. So yeah, I think, you know, for me, Daryl Mitchell is again a county legend. So as I say, wish him all the best, and hopefully we see him have other roles within cricket in the future. I think you mentioned he wants to do coaching when we did the podcast. So who knows? Maybe we'll see him as a coach in some capacity, whether it be for a county or for England or elsewhere in the game. Who knows? But yeah, I don't think his time in professional cricket is done, in my opinion. As a player, of course, it is, but maybe not as a coach.
Well, Joe, we can certainly hope so, can't we? Because he's a fantastic character. He's been a fantastic cricketer always seem to score runs or take wickets against Warwickshire, so I won't be missing that personally from Daz. But yeah, honestly, one of the good guys in county cricket, of course, has done some wonderful work with PCA. And it goes without saying, but we're wishing Darren nothing but the very best of luck heading into the future. And of course, in this game, a lovely touching moment was when Leicestershire gave him a guard of honour out to the crease for the final time. The Worcestershire fans there who have been backing him for the past decade or so, all behind him, all clapping and cheering. And it was just a wonderful send-off for a legend of the club. So, of course, a great, great occasion, a good win as well, of course, for Worcestershire winning by 10 wickets, a good way to end what's been a relatively frustrating Red Bull season. And of course, Joe, for Worcestershire, what do you make of the West Midlands side heading into 2022?
Well, I think Worcester have built a good foundation for themselves. And, you know, obviously they've lost Darryl Mitchell, as we've just talked about. So that's the end of that owning partnership, which has been so successful between him and Jake Libby. But I genuinely think they do have a great foundation. I mean, Brett D'Oliveira, when he's not posting memes on Instagram, is scoring a lot of runs and taking a lot of wickets, which is really, really important in that middle order. Jack Haynes as well and Ed Barnard. For me, those three will be pretty important next season, to be honest. And I think it'll be interesting as well. Obviously, they brought in Ed Pollock. I think that's going to be really interesting to see if he takes up that role at the top of the order next season in Red Bull cricket. Because I don't know how much you've seen of Ed Pollock in Red Bull cricket. Obviously, a former Warwickshire player. I don't know how much you've seen of him. And I don't know if you think he would be suited to batting at the top of the order. But for me, he could be come in and be kind of like a David Warner-esque kind of opener. You know, left-hander, very punchy player, and is predominantly a white ball cricketer, but comes in and transforms into a three-format cricketer. I don't know about your thoughts on that, but for me, that could be something interesting to try on next season. And then, yeah, their bowling is very young. Definitely something to build on.
It's interesting, isn't it, Joe, with Worcester next season? Because with Ed Pollock, he hasn't played a first-class game in 4 years. I believe his last one was for Durham MCCU in 2017. And I think he batted three or four, if I'm not mistaken. That was his final first-class game for Durham MCCU. But, of course, never played a championship game for Warwickshire. In terms of Ed Pollock as a first-class player, I'm not sure whether that's something we'll see. He never played a championship game.
Have you ever seen him in Test cricket?
For Warwickshire?
Not in Test cricket. Have you ever seen him in second 11 cricket? I mean, not Test cricket.
He has done, but again, he's never really broke through to the Warwickshire team.
Yeah.
When you look at Worcestershire heading into next season, with the likes of D'Oliveira, with the likes of Haynes, Libby, Tom Fell, of course, as well, Gareth Roderick, and of course, new signing Matthew Wade as well, it's going to be difficult. To be honest, I don't see him playing Red Bull cricket. Not immediately, at least. I feel as though Worcestershire have got I think they've got quite a deep batting lineup, to be honest, heading into next year.
Only time will tell.
Yep, that is very, very true, Joe. I do wish that Worcester had kept Alex Milton, though. I'm going to be honest, hope that he's also snapped up by County, but of course, that's very, very much off topic. Worcestershire aside, though, Joe, of course, Leicestershire, it's been an okay season for the Running Foxes. Like, they've been very competitive in Group 2 when they played against the likes of Surrey, the likes of Hampshire, for example, as well, and Somerset, but this was a pretty disappointing end to the season, in particular with the ball. I feel as though they let the game slip in Worcestershire's first innings. But to be honest, there were some good things from Leicestershire in this game. And one of them really, really did make me smile. And that was Sam Bates making his first class debut. In fact, it was his county debut for Leicestershire. And for those of you out there who maybe don't know Sam, he has worked so, so hard in second 11 cricket. He's done a lot of stuff with Paul Nixon, of course, the head coach of Leicestershire. And he's a good young talent. He's a good young talent, Sam Bates. He hasn't quite had the second 11 season that he would have hoped for. Hasn't necessarily scored the runs. But in terms of technical proficiency behind the stumps, he's a real talent. Let me just tell you that right now. Definitely an apt replacement for Harry Swindells in terms of, you know, COVID replacement or, of course, an injury. So Sam Bates, I was buzzing for him. He really does love Leicestershire. He's worked so, so hard with his wicket keeping. And again, he had a decent first-class debut. You got a duck with the bat, but in terms of the glove work, I thought it was absolutely exceptional. And then, of course, another player who stood out to me in this game was George Rhodes. Unlucky not to have scored a century, but his 90 from 220 balls was outstanding. So for Leicestershire, it's been an interesting season. I think overall it's been a positive one. I believe Dan Weston on Twitter, He put that it's been Leicestershire's best season in terms of win percentage since 2010. So definite progress being made. And the key thing with Leicestershire as a club is that there's an end goal. They are a team in transition for the moment, but they've got the building blocks in place. There's a clear vision, a clear strategy, a clear outlook for the future. So I'm excited. I've said this all season long, haven't I, Joe? I've said it all the way back ever since Sean Jarvis became the CEO of Leicestershire. Exciting times at Grace Road. And although they aren't necessarily competing just yet, I do feel as though we'll see the Foxes being much more competitive. Maybe not so much in 2022, but definitely from 2023 onwards. We shall have to wait and see. But Joe, moving on from that game at New Road, let's go down to Hove for the game between Derbyshire and Sussex, where Derbyshire finally recorded their first championship win of the season after beating the Martlets by 9 wickets at the First Central County Ground. Again, Joe, for both of these teams, let's be completely honest, it hasn't been their season at all. Languishing at the bottom of Division 3, of course, for completely different reasons. Sussex undergoing a lot of changes, bringing in a lot of good young talents. But the key there being young, they're inexperienced, they haven't played necessarily many years at this level. But with that being said, I know they're bottom, I know they're finished with the wooden spoon, and I know in this game as well, that was a pretty heavy defeat. But with the likes of Tom Haynes, who finished this season as the County Championship's leading run scorer with 1,176 runs at 47.04, with the emergence of guys like Daniel Ibrahim, Henry Crocombe, Jack Carson, Sean Hunt, Ollie Carter, Harrison Ward, Ali Orr, Jamie Atkins, like there's so many good young talents in Sussex, but it's just not been their season, has it, Joe? And the same thing can be said about Derbyshire as well, can't it, with all the injuries. Wayne Madsen, I was very, very happy to see him back in the runs. He scored 111 in this particular encounter from 182 balls, but it's not really been a season to remember, has it, for Derbyshire, unfortunately, Joe?
Yeah, if I'm being honest, I do kind of worry a little bit about Sussex. I mean, they've obviously lost Phil Sutton, Chris Jordan weren't playing, but they've obviously lost them. And I don't worry about the quality of players. I worry about how long it's going to take for these players to be competing. Because, you know, isn't their average age, that their average squad age about like 19 or 20 or something? It's going to take quite a long time for some of these players to kind of bed in. Generally, I think 24 is quite a young average squad age. I'm looking at 26, 27. So I definitely think with some smart recruitment, I don't doubt that Sussex can be challenging again, certainly if they were to keep this format, let's say, in Division 2. But I do kind of worry a little bit about the experience of some of these lads. And as I say, I don't doubt their quality. Sussex have proven that they have a good academy, but the experience of some of these guys maybe just isn't quite there yet. But who knows, maybe I'm talking complete rubbish and they'll end up winning some stuff next year. But again, similar to with Worcestershire, only time will tell, I guess.
Very true, Joe. But to be honest with Sussex, I do think the future's bright. They just need, you know,
100%. That's not what, you know,
they just need that structure, agree, though, yeah. Don't they? They need
definitely,
they need
yeah.
experience.
They need kind of a pathway, yeah.
Exactly. Definitely. No, I see your point. I see your point. And maybe it won't be 2022, but again, a bit like Leicestershire, it's laying the foundation. Transition years. I'll always remember this from Jim Charlton back on one of our earlier podcasts. He said transition years are never pretty. Transition years are ugly, but they're necessary. Look at Warwickshire, for example. Okay, look at some of the great teams in the past. You can't just generate a good team out of nowhere. You need to have a foundation. You need to put in the building blocks and put in the hard yard, shall we say. But to be honest, hopefully Sussex, of course, heading into the future, can have a much better championship in 2022. And for Derbyshire as well, because I feel for Derbyshire fans. This season, I'm going to be honest, after 2020, where they were phenomenal in Group 3. Absolutely brilliant. They finished above Lancashire. They finished second only behind Yorkshire in that group. And in 2021, they've just been absolutely annihilated by injuries. They've had COVID outbreaks, multiple ones as well, at the Incora Ground. So wishing Derbyshire the best of luck as well, of course. I do like Derbyshire as a club. Great, great community club. Wonderful players as well. Likes of Wayne Madsen, Lewis Rees, Billy Godelman, to name but a few. And of course, just one final mention One final player I'd love to give a massive shout out to is Ben Aitchison. Ben Aitchison this season has been absolutely outstanding for Derbyshire. Just looking at his stats in the 2021 County Championship, 34 wickets at 23.29. 34 wickets, Derbyshire's leading wicket taker, and he's only 22 years of age. Of course, Joe, you'll be familiar with him from Cheshire. So Ben Aitchison, again, a good young talent for the future, alongside the likes of Sam Connors, Dustin Melton, George Scrimshaw as well, of course. I do feel as though 2022 will be a bit brighter for the men from the East Midlands. So Joe, moving on to our final game, not just of Division 3, but our final time talking about a championship game. In 2021, Kent beat Middlesex by 2 wickets at the Spitfire Ground. And just one player I want to mention, Joe, before I get your thoughts, Tawanda Muyeye. Absolutely fantastic. First of all, to see him in county cricket. And second of all, producing a knock of 89 from 172 balls. This guy's a special talent. I'll say that so many times. I don't mind repeating myself on multiple occasions. Tawanda Muyeye just drips and oozes class. He's very elegant. He's very stylish, very free-flowing in terms of his approach to the game. And it was brilliant to see him and Ollie Robinson, of course, a former guest here on TCCP. Ollie Rob scored 112 in this particular game from 163 balls. But honestly, their partnership, I believe it was 173 runs between those two, was exceptional. And it really, really was good to watch. Of course, in addition to those two as well, Joe, Darren Stevens, if it was up to me, wouldn't retire, Joe. Would you agree? Offer Steve a 10-year contract?
Well, to me, that seems the only logical step forward for Kent. I mean, they've won the T20 Blast. They've won Division 3, so you may as well keep your best player for an extra 10 years, regardless of the fact that he'll be almost 60 years old in that time.
And he'd still take 40 wickets a season.
He probably would as well, to be fair. He probably would. But yeah, no, in all seriousness, I think Kent have ended the season as well as they could have hoped. They had a terrible start to the season. And you know, to win the T20 Blast, when, if I'm being honest, I didn't think they were favourite. I didn't have them favourites.
I did. As you know, I just didn't say them.
Yeah, that. But nah, as I said, I didn't personally have them favourites. I thought, I personally thought Sussex obviously would have won the T20. But you know, a fair play to Kent. They won the T20, and now they've won Division 3. So talk about ending the season well. They have some really, really good players. And I think if they recruit well next season, they could actually be a threat. And it's pretty clear to see that the start of the season was a blip. And they're actually not that bad at all. So, yeah, I think for me, Kent are certainly a threat to Lancs and to Warwickshire and to other teams in, all forms of cricket next season, if I'm being honest. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with them. I mean, if they keep Sam Billings around for a little bit longer in terms of if he doesn't go and play for England, they're also in a great position as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's great to see them succeeding at the end of the season.
Well, I definitely agree with that. And fingers crossed for Kent fans, of course. 2022, you can get off to a better start, of course. Group 3 got off to quite a poor start, didn't they, Kent? They were languishing towards the bottom, of course. And then they've had this late season resurgence. And as you said, Joe, deserving winners of the Blast. They've had a fantastic end to the season in the Red Ball as well. So yeah, may this be the start, shall we say, of some better times down at the Spitfire Ground in Canterbury. And of course, Joe, aside from Kent, we have to talk a bit about Middlesex as well. And Mark Stoneman, I mean, what an incredible signing he's been. When we look back on some of the review shows from this season, the real crux, the Achilles heel of Middlesex this year has been the batting. And we said about them not scoring enough centuries, not scoring enough quick runs. But the fact is, this season, as soon as you put Mark Stoneman alongside the likes of Sam Robson, let's just have a look at their stats. It's Mark Stoneman in 4 games, 354 runs, an average of 50.57. He also scored another century in this game down in Canterbury. And alongside Sam Robson, who scored 1,047 runs at 40.26, he was this year's third leading run scorer in the entire competition. All of a sudden, Middlesex is, you know, their fortunes started going up, didn't they? As soon as Stoneman signed, I think it was a fantastic piece of business after losing Nick Gubbins, a stalwart of Middlesex County Cricket Club. And as soon as you bring in the experience, a former England opener, an experienced veteran at this level of cricket, and you put him alongside Sam Robson, and then you introduce the likes of Robbie White, who's had a real breakthrough season for the London club. And then you, of course, have that lethal seam attack with the likes of Tim Murta, Toby Rowland-Jones. No longer will have Steve Finn. Of course, Stephen Finn is going to Sussex for 2022. But the Saxes, they haven't had a great season in Red Bull cricket. Okay, I'm not going to be, you know, what to say, sugarcoating their performances this season. But again, they've got some good young players. They've recruited well. And I just feel like in a few years' time, maybe not 2022, maybe not even 2023, but with the right steps in place, again, maybe we could see them challenging again. After a few poor seasons in Red Bull cricket, of course, they got relegated, didn't they, in 2017 after Arrogate. But yeah, I just hope that the Saxes' fortunes can improve, Joe. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, again, similarly to you know, some other sides, they've got a good base to build from. I think, I mean, I'd say Robson and Stoneman, for me, two excellent experienced openers around. I mean, obviously they're excellent cricketers, but two of them as experienced openers around. That's what you need at the top of the order. You need some real stickability, someone who's going to, you know, face a lot of balls and not get flustered if they have, I don't know, three or four maidens in a row, for example, where they don't score many runs. And then if you look down from that, you know, the likes of Eskenazi, Robbie White, Max Holden, these kind of guys, brilliant, brilliant cricketers. And I think that's where they kind of have to build from, is that you're able to set the tone, right? And for me, Robson and Stoneman do that perfectly well. From there, you know, that's where Middlesets kind of have to find their feet almost and find that that's what they're good at. And I think overseas recruitment this year will be key. I think they need a middle order batsman this year. I don't think personally Peter Hanscom's the right fit if he's going to be the captain. I've never really thought Peter Hanscom scores runs when he's the captain. I've never really thought that they go hand in hand almost. So if they do get Hanscom back, I don't think he should be made captain. Maybe they'll get someone else. And then for me, the other crucial player in this is John Simpson. For me, John Simpson could easily be playing Test cricket for England. I think he's one of England's best wicketkeepers. And I think he's also a consistent run scorer. He showed that in the ODIs. He can score runs at international level. Different format, of course. Totally different format. But still showed how good he is. So for me, John Simpson is another crucial player. And it'll be interesting to see, as I say, how their overseas recruitment goes next year. And if they do bring a middle-order player in, or if they maybe look to strengthen somewhere else. But I think their bowling is that's great. Right, I think Ethan Bamber's a great player. I think Luke Holman's a good spinner. Obviously got Roland Jones and Murta, you know, so experienced. And obviously Blake Cullen as well, who didn't play in this game. But again, very, very good cricketer. So I think their bowling attack is strong. It's their middle order where if they can recruit well in that, then I think they'll be in a decent position.
Absolutely, Joe. And again, to use your phrase, only time will tell. Of course, this is all speculation. And this is the beauty of the County Championship as a competition, isn't it? We don't know what's going to happen in 2022. We'll have to wait and find out. And of course, as the review shows go along next year, we will indeed find our winner at some point. But Joe, just before we wrap up today's show, we do, of course, have the Bobolish Trophy. It gets underway tomorrow on Tuesday, the 28th of September at the home of cricket, Lord's Cricket Ground. That will be contested between my county of Warwickshire and your county of Lancashire, Joe. And I know, obviously, it didn't end the way in which Lancashire fans would have wanted, but how fitting is it that the two teams that are supported by the hosts of the County Cricket Podcast are competing for the Bobolish Trophy in 2021? I think that's a really, you know, I think that's quite a nice game, to be honest. Nice exhibition game to wrap up this season. So, Joe, just one final word. Who's going to win the Bobolish Trophy?
If I'm being honest, I think Lancashire, because Warwickshire will be drinking all week. maybe not drinking, but Warwickshire will be celebrating all week. So, I think Lancashire will win. But I would have said Lancs, even Lancs who won the championship, let's be honest. Either way, I'm going to say Lancs, you're going to say Warwickshire. We could require a poll on Twitter.
We could indeed, Joe. Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But I would say Warwickshire in that regard, because we're very proud fans of our respective counties. But I actually think it's going to be a draw looking at the weather. So those are our predictions, folks. And of course, just before we end today's episode, just one massive thank you from myself and Joe, and of course, Lucy as well, to each and every single one of you legends who's tuned into our podcast in 2021. Honestly, it's been absolutely incredible, the support, the message on Twitter, and at the ground as well. I mean, I've had people come up to me at Edgebaston and say they've enjoyed the episodes, and I just want you to know, listeners, it really, really does mean a lot to us. It gives us the motivation to carry on. We love county cricket here at the County Cricket Podcast. We're going absolutely nowhere. We've got some more content planned, plenty more interviews for the off-season to keep your county cricket cravings satisfied. And of course, yeah, just wishing everyone a very, very happy and safe off-season heading into the 2022 county cricket season. But that is it, of course, for us to hear at the County Cricket Podcast for today's County Championship wrap-up show. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.